This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I am Brett Boone. Today on the program, we got an alumni of the Brett Boone Podcast, former teammate of mine, and can I call him this? Fantasy camp mentor. That's what Mark Grand is to me. I went to my first fantasy camp, and he was there. He's been the color commentator for the Padres since 1997. Always great catching up with, everybody knows him as Mud. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Mark Grant to the show. Granter, how you doing, son? Thanks for coming on.
What's up, Boone? It's always good to see you. I saw you at the Ball Yard last homestand, which was nice.
Pop in on occasion.
Yeah, you're always welcome. You know that.
All right, Mud. Disclosure for the people out there listening to the Brett Boone Podcast. We call it Mud. You a better pitcher or broadcaster?
If I say neither, does that answer the question? Because I was horrible on the mound. I don't like to talk about myself.
You weren't horrible.
I tell you what, I will tell you this. I don't even want to say I'm having more fun in the booth because I had fun pitching. I love the competition. I love the beauty of the game, the one-on-one battle with the hitter. It's a different kind of fun. But I tell you, I will summarize this way, Boone. I don't bring my work home with me, and I don't have to worry about hanging sliders or backing up third base when I'm in the booth. How about that?
Fair. But, you know, I think this, and I found that Mark and I were teammates when I was a young player at AAA and my early years with the Seattle Mariners, when I wasn't very good at not bringing home work. Work came with me everywhere I went. And a lot of times when we're young and emotional, that's what we do. We learn as time goes on to separate that. It's funny you say, as a player, Mark, did you bring work home with you? As a broadcaster now, as an analyst, you don't bring it home with you. What's done is done. Good days, bad days, and different. As a player, how was it for you?
Horrible. I remember coming home in my car, like when I was at the Padres or whoever I was with, maybe I had a bad, I was the type of guy that lived and died with each outing. If I had a horrible outing, it was like, oh gosh, I'm going to get sent down. I'm going to get released. There was maybe 1 year, Brett, where I felt like I kind of, 1 or 2 years where I felt like I belonged. You know what that's like? You know, you make it to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. You want to stay in the big leagues. You want to produce at the big leagues. But I always brought it home with me thinking, oh my gosh, what a horrible sequence of pitches that was. Oh my gosh, why did I throw that pitch? Oh my gosh, I'm gonna get sent down. But it was the worst. So yes, I was not good at just leaving it at the ballpark and then going on with my life.
Now, when you're in the booth now, what are you looking at, and are you trying to, as the game goes on, mm-hmm. are you trying to analyze, or are you trying to teach the crowd that's listening to you, the audience?
Both, Brett. I think that's great. that you bring that up because, you know, we do so many games. It's not like the game of the week where you can just lay everything out there for one game. What I try to do is teach something, have some fun, and make them say, wow, I didn't know that. And that's not going to happen probably every night, but that's the intent, and that's what I feel like I should bring every night. Analyze, yes, movement of players on certain plays. You know, it's not like football where there's a playbook that's this thick. I mean, there's really not a lot of secrets in baseball. You know, you kind of know what's going to go on in a certain situation, but yet – positioning of the players, why a guy takes a swing at a certain pitch, why a pitcher throws a certain pitch, how to throw a certain pitch. That's why I kind of, you know, I like to do the visual things as far as like the, you know, the grips of the baseballs and stuff like that. People
right.
really seem to enjoy that. So that's what I try to bring every night and have a few chuckles as well. You know, Brett, you know, when you and I sat on the bench, you know, we were into the game, we were talking about the game, but you know, with your sense of humor, you were serious, I was serious, but yet you gotta break the tension sometimes, right? You gotta, and if it's a game where you're on the bench and it's a blowout or something, and you're gonna have some fun. You know, if you're on the losing end, you kind of tone it down a little bit. But I'm not saying you know you get the you know the pom poms out and the noisemakers and everything. But, you know, you have fun, right? And that's what I want to bring.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's a time and a place. You can't let other people know you're having fun. But nevertheless, 162 games, you got to have fun or you're not going to survive very long in this game. You were a first-round pick.
Yeah, how about that?
No, but my question is this. That was then.
Right.
This is now. If Mark Grant is 18 years old and he's a first-round pick right now, with the way the game is taught, you go five innings, that's it. Mm-hmm. Maximum velocity. How are you doing it different than you did it in your day?
You know what? You make a good point because when I was 17 and into the minor leagues, I redlined like every pitch. You know, the term redline now is thrown out there where guys are giving max effort each and every pitch. That's the way I was, where I learned later on as I got older that you don't have to go 100% every pitch. You know, first pitch fastball outside corner, you know, 80%, 75%. You know, you spin up a breaking ball early just to give the guy a different look. I think with my mentality as a kid back then, I would have fit in great right now because I was over the top, high 90s. I had a yacker. I pitched at the top. It was tough for me to pitch down in the zone. I pitched up in the zone, and I had a yacker, 12 to 6, spun it really well. So I think today's game, me as an 18, 19, 20 year old would have fit in really good because I would have loved to gone out there and just go, here it is, let it eat for six innings and then let the bullpen take over.
When you watch the game now from the booth versus when you were playing, do you see more pitchers or throwers now versus your time?
Yeah, I see more throwers. And in fact, that's one thing I've always talked about. Very few guys know how to, which I think is the best pitch in baseball. Everybody asks, if you ask the question, what's the best pitch in baseball? Somebody poses me that question. To me, my answer is a well-located fastball. And this goes back to my rookie Absolutely. Season. I was 20 years old with the Giants. I remember sitting on a plane and Dusty Baker was my teammate. And I asked him, I wanted to pick his brain because he was a hitter for a long, long time. I said, Dusty, what's the best pitch in baseball? He goes, as a right-handed hitter for a pitcher, that fastball down and away right at the knees. You can't do much with it. And, Brett, you hit from the right side. You played against guys who could locate and dot with regularity. You could probably flare. I know the Boone could do a lot with a lot of pitches, a lot of plate coverage. But I know you could take that pitch that pitch away and kind of flare it to right. But if that's the worst, then, hey, you know what? That might happen two, three times out of 10, maybe. And on the other side, it's going to work to your favor. So I see more throwers these days. See how hard, rather than kind of learning how to pinpoint.
Right. Because I think, especially when you're a young player in velocity, I know when I was coming up, I didn't care how hard you throw. If you mm-hmm. miss out over the plate, it doesn't matter velocity. But if you can locate your fastball and prove to me that you can locate it, I've got to worry about that pitch. It's the guys yep. that are max velocity. I don't have to worry about that fastball because I know in a big situation they're going to go to the breaking ball. They become predictable. I watched the game today, and they're talking about it's different. A lot of 2-0 counts, 3-1 counts nowadays. It's almost a given it's going to be an off speed. Well, as a hitter, that's our job. Man, you tell me, my job is to make the count predictable, pitch predictable. If I can eliminate a pitch in a certain situation, advantage me. That's the toughest part. If I know, you know, I don't care about fastball versus sliders, Mud. Sometimes I'm coming to the ballpark and I wasn't feeling good. I go, I hope this guy flips me a bunch of breaking balls today because I'm going to wear him out. I don't feel like getting to that 97, 98.
Yeah.
Breaking balls are just as easy to hit as fastballs if you know they're coming. And I just, as a hitter, I always just wanted to, if I can eliminate a pitch, if I can do something, if Mark Grant throws me a fastball well located, low and away at the knees, and I take it, just put a good swing on it. I don't have to hit a run, but if I smoke one in the hole as a pitcher, you're going to go, wait a minute, that was a good pitch. How did he do that? Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, I'm thinking, okay, has he fallen into my trap? He's going to go away from fastball away. So now he's either going to pound me in or trick me. And I'm just going to sit there. I don't want that ball in. So I'm going to sit on your neck and wait for that off-speed pitch. Hopefully now the key is when I get it, don't miss it. But that's the cat and mouse of pitching and hitting.
Right. And my question to you, Booney, would be, as a hitter, did you just salivate every time to where a pitcher where he could not locate or throw this pitch for a strike? And it's just like, okay, whenever I see spin, I'm just going to spit on it and just wait for your fastball. And you know what? If you try to do that and always miss and walk me, fine, I'll take the walk. But as a hitter, I mean, if they couldn't do that, I mean, you were just waiting back, I'll guess.
Well, I'll tell you, it's kind of the reverse, because if I'm looking for a breaking ball as a hitter and you throw me fastballs, it's easy to lay off. But the reverse sometimes is tough, especially with a guy that's got good arm velocity. It looks the same. Your motions, you're coming out of the same spot for the fastball as you are for the breaking ball. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you could trick me with a spin, but if I'm sitting on your breaking ball and you throw me a fastball high, there's no chance that I'm going to chase that. But if I'm looking for a fastball middle away and you throw me a good arm slot slider, my eyes sometimes read fastball. Mm. Oh, that's when you get the silly swing or the bad swing where you miss it by 6 inches. So for me, Mark, it was easier to sit on the breaking ball, take the fastball. So now you're not going to embarrass me with the breaking ball. Whereas, all right, I'm sitting dead red and oh, there goes a good slider. You know, that's the difference for me. And when I would get into a rut, I would almost go, okay, I'm not picking up the spin on his breaking ball. I don't want to keep chasing it. So I got to sit on it. Cause when I sit on it, I can pick up the spin, but if I'm not, I'll chase it. All I've got to say here is if he throws me three fastballs away, I got to tip my cap. I lost the battle there. I lost that cat and mouse. But for me, especially when I was struggling, it's like, nope, I'm going to go sit on a breaking ball. And hopefully I get one in the middle of the plate because I can't stop chasing it, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. And while I got you on the subject, who had the best breaking ball that you faced? And what was the pitch?
Pound for pound throughout a large body of work, I'd have to say John Smoltz was the toughest on me from just a visionary. I could not see it. He would throw me four seamers away at 95, and he would throw what appeared to be a four seamer away, but it was a slider. Mm-hmm. And he would never throw me a slider for a strike, but he gave me the illusion that it was a four seam fastball away, and he would just break it off the corner. And it's a swing and miss. And for the life of me, I faced this man for 15 years. I took him deep one time, but it seemed like when I was sitting on the breaking ball, it was a fastball on the corner. And when I said, screw it, look for that fastball away, I would chase that breaking ball off the plate. So day in and day out over my entire career, John Smoltz was the toughest on me from a breaking ball perspective. I'll tell you, what's interesting is when he dropped down three quarters when he was having elbow problems and he went into the pen and he became a closer for a minute, I remember facing him in Seattle. We faced the Braves. And I'll tell you, for the first time in my life, I could see all John Smoltz's pitches, and it was because he was three quarters. He got away from throwing over the top, and it was like, wow, I wish this was the way he was. And at that time, he was a nasty closer, but I saw him great. Mm-hmm. I'd take this John Smoltz, the closer, over that 12-6 guy all day long, because I had no success off him.
Hence, next stop, Cooperstown, right? He did have nasty stuff.
Yeah, he was pretty special. A lot is made, Mark, of the strike zone. You're sitting up in the booth. I'm tired of that, of the box. I'm tired of it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's not even what is truly taught behind the scenes for the umpires. It's kind of for, we had Ted Barrett on the program a couple of weeks.
It just gives you a guide, right?
For entertainment purposes only, because that's right. Not what we train, Brett. So it gives you a guide. So
right.
The thing is, and it's tough when it's your job and you've got to do a game every single day, it's tough to stay away from it. But I see more and more now, it seems like a lot of guys are spending 90% of their time, if the ball hit that line, talking about it. Whereas back in our day, before the line was there, it was subjective. You knew what a good pitch was on the quarter. Sometimes you got it, sometimes you didn't. But now with that false sense of security, because we have the box, everybody thinks they're an expert. And if it hits the box, everybody at home on their couch, everybody on Twitter, how could you possibly miss that pitch when it's not a foolproof system?
Right. Here's one thing I have learned about that box. On the corners, it's pretty accurate because the 17 inches doesn't swell or get smaller or get bigger. That's set. What's inconsistent is the north and south to the hitters. Like you said, it just gives the viewers a guide. As you said, Ted Barrett said, it's like a guide. I mean, the 17 inches isn't going to change. So that's set. So I have learned, and I've talked to some people, if that ball hits that corner and it lights up, that's pretty much a strike. Pretty much a strike. Now, the ones up top, and because the hitter's strike zone adjusts. And I don't think they have the capability or the technology to each every hitter to kind of just, it's almost like a guesstimate, I would say. So when you're going high to low and it's out of the box, maybe it's a strike. But that the inconsistency of the up and down isn't as accurate as on the corners. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And in our day when we were playing, it was a subjective box. I mean, some umpires had certain strike zones. Some umpires had other strike zones. I think now what they're going for in 2024 is a universal strike zone. They want everybody to call the exact same strike zone. Hence, there's a lot of talk about robo-umps and the challenge system. I think that's going to be interesting. I think for me, it would be easier to hit today. For me, my style, I was a high ball hitter because they're not giving off the corners like they used to. They called a high strike, but that was kind of my wheelhouse. That's the pitch I liked. Now, I know the velocity's up a tick or two since my last days of playing. But, man, I'd like that strike zone where those corners are tight and they're not giving them in or off the plate.
You know what? I see a lot of umpires, like you said, you've used the word subjective, and it is subjective. But I've seen pitches off the plate called a lot.
But it seems the universal, what they're trying to implement, and let's say we go to the robo ump.
Okay.
They want to have a computer line on that corner, so they're not going to go off the corner. I thought about it a lot because I don't like getting rid of the umpires. I like the human element. I think it's a part of the game, always has been. But if there's going to be this much scrutiny, I think the umpires are unfairly judged because it's such a hard job. And when you've got everybody with super slow-mo and laser beams on the thing, it's an impossible situation. So if it's going to be that way, I almost put myself in the hitter's perspective now and think, well, at least if they go to the robo, the computer, I know exactly what the strike zone is. And it's not Fred's umpiring tonight and Joe's umpiring tomorrow. It doesn't matter who's umpiring. It's the same every night.
Right.
Part of me hates the human element being taken away, but a part of me thinks, well, at least I know exactly what a ball and a strike is.
I think that's where I stand. And first of all, let's get back to the umpires. I've got all the respect in the world for the umpires. We've known this ever since we've been in Little League. It's a no-win situation. It's a thankless job. But I tell you what, these guys bust their tails. Do you think, Brett, that these umpires come to the ball yard each and every night and say, you know what? I hope I screw up about three or four calls tonight. Yeah, all right, let's go get them. You know? No, they don't.
I want to get worn out on Twitter.
Right. They want to get the calls right. And if there's a little bit of technology that can help, I think I've talked to Mike Winters here in San Diego, and he said, you know what? Electronic strike zone? Bring it on. He goes, he's a fan because these guys want to get it right.
It'll be funny. If they do go to electronic, though, Grant, you could do a segment on it with all your imitations out there. Yeah, how about if you're not calling balls and strikes and you're just the umpire behind the plate for the day? What do you do?
Yeah, well,
you can do a whole segment on it. We can have the Mark Grant imitation.
Another thing you could do is, you know, they could like put a little chair back there, like with, you know, a little table,
like
with
a bar coffee or something. Chair.
Right, there you go. Just, and then all they're going to do is like out and safe. But then again, you've got the challenge, right? So hey, you guys, close plate. Let's just go to challenge.
Why
am I
do
here?
Anything?
Exactly.
It used to be, it was a big deal. The night you're behind the plate, you got a good night's sleep. You're ready to go. Yeah. Hey, you got the dish tomorrow. Then it would turn into, you got the dish tomorrow. All you have to be there, you just have to have your uniform on and don't fall asleep.
You're kind of like hanging back by the wall like a ball attendant down the lines. You're just kind of sitting there. Right?
Right. Maybe signing some autographs. I don't know. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Quick question on you. We'll move on from this. But with the clock, I know you're a fan of it. I'm a fan of it. I didn't think I was going to be a fan of the new pitch clock. And that's, you know, that's old news. But from a pitcher's perspective, before the clock, me at second base, I watch a Mark Grant and he's laboring. He's having a rough inning. He needs a breather. We need to talk about something else, where we're going to dinner tonight. I know he just needs 30, 45 seconds, settle down and get back into the groove. You don't have that option anymore. You can't. I can't come in there and break up the monotony, tell you a joke, just give you a breather. How do you think that's affecting today's pitchers with the implementation of the new pitch clock?
I think like anything that has been set for a long, long time, people, athletes, whatever vocation we're in, change is really tough at times. But I think that if you're a pro in your job and in your work, I think just through time, you are going to adjust. Think of how many times, Brett, that you had to adjust at the big league level from the minor leagues, whatever the case was. I think through time, it's just like anything else. It's like from generation to generation. I look at a generation before me, and then they look at the younger generation, looks at what we have gone through, and it's like we've all gone through change. So I think it's going to take time to where that generation or those few years to where people are going to adjust to it. So to answer your question, I think pitchers these days, I didn't think it took that long for them to adjust. And whether, you know, mound visits, catcher's visits, guys from the, you know, you're sacrificing something, a mound visit or, you know, a ball that's going to go against the pitcher. But I think I would have done just fine with that. I tend to like to work quickly anyway. Whether I was going to do well or going to do horrible, which the latter is probably the case, you know, get it done quickly. But I just feel that guys adjust. And, you know, there's something to be said about that, though, because when an infielder comes in, that could help a young pitcher. But nowadays, you got to curb that. You can't have as many visits as you want to try to calm down your pitcher. But I think it all boils down to guys adjusting. And I think guys have adjusted quite well.
Move on over to the Padres. You've been at this, Mark, a long time. You know, a lot of Padre teams come and go, a lot of generations. This particular group, there's been a lot of expectation with recent signings in the last few years. From the Tatis, the Machado, you got a young Cronenworth. Bogarts comes over from Boston in a big deal. You recently signed Luis Arraez. You got him in a trade from the Marlins. He's been great so far. That pitching staff, you brought Cease over, King from in that Soto trade from the New York Yankees, the reliable and really a great pitcher and has been for a long time, but he's in the twilight of his career. And a Yu Darvish. Musgrove has had some problems this year. He's on the IL right now. Overall, 2024 expectations going in. Give me a snapshot of Mark Grant's view of the Padres so far this season.
I think they have the players to make the playoffs. Here's the key for the Padres this year. I think they've got a star-studded lineup to where they have shown that they can put some runs on the board early. I think the big key, Booney, is going to be the bullpen, like any type of ball club that's going to get to your closer. This team has shown that it can put up the big inning. That's pretty evident this last road trip. They can catch the ball. Are they going to win 100 games? I don't know. That remains to be seen. You know as well as anybody, it's just about getting into the playoffs. But I think this team, you know, there is a sense of this team has a go-get 'em attitude, a don't quit attitude. I know that sounds cliche, but it is. It really is. And Mike Shildt and his coaching staff doing a great job. And like any team, if they remain healthy, obviously they've got a chance. As far as the division is concerned, yeah, you always have to be concerned about the Dodgers, but freaky things can happen. But I like the way this team battles. I really do. Their blueprint this year for hitting, it's not just like one-dimensional. We see guys using the whole field, situational type hitting, stuff like that. So I think overall, yeah, it's a good, solid team through and through. The one thing I would probably, you know, that bridge between the starters to the closer, like any team, I think that, you know, once they get a couple guys, you know, Wandy Peralta has done okay. He's done well. He's had a couple outings where, you know, he's gotten a little wild, but, you know, Matsui is a big, big piece of that bullpen. Kolek, the kid from Seattle, the Rule 5 guy, he pitched in a big leverage situation the other day. But, you know, I think through and through, this is a team that teams got to, you know, kind of worry about because they'll come back. They'll come back from games, from deficits.
Profar has been a huge, boost for that offense. I don't think anybody expected for him to be doing what he's doing now in a rise. I've watched him, you know, he's down in Miami and you don't get to see him that often. You know, he's got the batting titles and he's a real Ichiro type hitter. But I watched the first game he came over to. He got four hits, and the amount of energy he had in that, it seemed like electrified that team. So far, give me the Profar and the Arise take of Mark Grant.
I tell you what, Jerkson Profar, he's like one of those kids on your team that everybody gravitates to. He's got the great attitude. He's a gamer, too. I think Jerkson Profar is one of those guys, if he's on the other team, he kind of ticks you off. Because of, you know, kind of the way he goes about playing and sometimes he, you know, his actions or whatever he does. But you want him on your team. I tell you what, he's not going to win a gold glove. But I tell you what, he's been very good in left field. He's got a strong, accurate arm. He's made some decent plays, taken away some extra bases. Once again, he's not going to win a gold glove, but he's been very, very good out there. I've been very, very happy with the way his on-base percentage right now is like 420. It's just ridiculous. And I think that's the beauty of this lineup, too. I think he realizes who's hitting behind him. And ever since we've gotten a rise leading off, now Jerkson's dropped down number five spot, which I love. Maybe give him some RBI opportunities. Now, Luis Arraez, heard about the guy in Miami, heard about him in Minnesota, heard about the batting titles. But when you see him each and every day, my gosh, this guy puts together a great at-bat. Short, quick swing. Not just a template stamp, one type of swing, not one type of hitter. This guy, you know, he might come over to San Diego, Booney, after being in Miami where it's a yard sale right now and just re-energize the team. And this guy might hit 400 for the rest of the year. He might end up hitting 350 on the year because he's on a team that, you know, has a chance to contend. So, yes, two guys that are energetic, and it shows, it rubs off, and I'm a big fan of both of those guys.
Going into the season this year, I looked at this division. I thought, man, Arizona goes to the World Series a year ago. They've got nothing but better. Off to a mediocre start. I thought San Fran, with the addition of Snell, Hicks is off to a great start for them. But I think they've fallen a little below expectations at the beginning of the season. I look at this Dodger team. They're so deep. Bueller's coming back for him now. I think they're the team as advertised. It's going to be tough to beat them in the division. But overall, right. I think this division outside of the Padres, I think is a really has potential over 162 to be very competitive.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think they've got a really good chance for the wild card. And here's the key to that, I think. The Dodgers, you're always going to have to contend with the Dodgers, right? Because they can always add. They've done that in the past. Like you said, they're deep. They got pitchers coming back that is always contend. Yeah. Padres got a battle against the Dodgers, and they've proven that they can beat the Dodgers, right? But it's the other teams, Booney, in the division that they have to beat up on the Rockies. They have to beat up on the Diamondbacks within the division. You know, the Giants, you know, what they're going through right now. I'm not saying sweep them every series, but you got to win those series. If you don't sweep them, you got to win those series. So the Dodgers are always going to be the Dodgers. And then, you know, if this team goes on a roll to where they like, made, let's say they win 10 out of 12 games. Oh, but it was against the Rockies and it was against the Diamondbacks. But you know what, though? No, those are the games you have to win. Those are the games you are supposed to win. So I think that's the big key for San Diego. Dodgers will always be the Dodgers. Close games, got to minimize your mistakes. But it's the other teams on the lower part of the division, even in the other divisions that aren't doing that well, that you have to beat up on and win series against.
And I'd mentioned you've been doing this 27 years from the booth.
29. This is my
29th
season.
All the Padres teams through the year. 29? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I started in 96. 1996 was my first year.
Oh, okay. After doing it for this long with so many different Padre ball clubs, do you have a pretty good gut by this time in your career where once you get a month, 2 months into the season, you got a feeling how this particular ball club's going to do, or year in and year out, does it surprise you?
No, this year, the gut feeling I get is it's going to be a scrappy team. It's not going to be a team that's going to hit a ton of home runs. Are you trying to like maybe talk like identity, like the identity of the Padres, what kind of team they are?
Yeah, well, usually when you're following a team and you're there on a daily basis, you're watching a team. After doing it for a while, you think, okay, the last time this happened, this team went on to win. I got a pretty good idea that this is how the season's going to play out. It could be positive. It could be negative. Do you feel like at this stage of the season, mid-May, late May, you have a pretty good gut? I saw this 5 years ago, and this what usually happens. Or are you still surprised this even after doing it for this long?
No, I'm not surprised. With the way the Padres are going this season, it's pretty energetic. It's pretty positive. There has been teams in the past that, you know, you look early on and you think, oh, yeah, this team's got a chance. It all boils down to pitching. And if these guys stay healthy, like the Joe Musgroves coming back and Yu Darvish, I think the pitching could carry it. I think this is going to be a scrappy team this year. And they're going to battle. They've shown that. There's been teams in the past, Booney, where the Padres, it's like – I'm not going to mention any years, but it's like in the first inning or so, the second inning, and there's like a 2 or 3 run deficit. It's like, I'm looking for my, you know, car keys. It's like, okay, well, you know, this is, you know, what's going to happen. You're but right. With this team this year, no, it's pretty positive and it's pretty energetic. So we got that sense from Mike Schilt in spring training. And after talking to the coaches, they've got a really good special feeling going on in that clubhouse this year.
All right, Granter, I appreciate you coming on the Brett Boone podcast, giving us a little tidbit.
That's it? We're done?
Of the podcast. What else you got? You're always the one. How long is it going to be? Half hour? 35 minutes? I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I got Tommy Seidler coming on the podcast next week.
Tom's great.
What should I ask him?
Ask him. He is head of, he runs the fantasy camp, which is great. Community, as you know what, I'm sure he's going to share a lot about Peter, who we all miss. Peter was, my gosh, the prince of a man, a beautiful human being, cared about others. Did you know Tom went to Notre Dame, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I despise Notre Dame, by the way. That's just a little nugget. and you going to USC, right?
Yeah, but you know...
I know you dislike Notre Dame too, pal.
Well, I dislike him, but I'm not that crazy SC guy like Aaron Boone who paints his face and puts on the SC jersey and plays the fight song on Saturday.
No,
that's
he doesn't.
That's not me.
Does he really?
Yes, he does. It's embarrassing, Mark. I said, damn it, Aaron, you're the manager of the New York Yankees. More importantly, you're my brother and you're a former big leaguer. Behave accordingly.
That's funny. But no, I would say with Tom, you know, ask him about the O'Malley family and his ties with the O'Malley family and, you know, the Dodger days and stuff like that, because it's really an intriguing story about Peter and his dad, Walter, and the Brooklyn Dodgers. And I'm sure Tom would have a lot of nuggets about that. That's interesting. Old school baseball stuff I love. And I'm sure Tom would be good to talk about that type of stuff.
You got it, Mud. I will see you when I see you. I'll be at the ball yard. Oh, I think I'll see you shortly. I think the Yankees are coming to town. I will be bringing Big Bob Boone to the ballpark. We'll stop by and you can talk. You can talk Bob Boone stuff.
Absolutely. Booney, always a pleasure, man. I love you tons. You were a great teammate. Seriously, we had a lot of laughs, and it's always good to see you, man. Thanks for having me.
For those of you out there watching the Boone Podcast now on YouTube, I appreciate you tuning in. For those of you listening on the Odyssey app or wherever you download your podcast, I appreciate it. Till next time, keep it here. Mud, appreciate it, man.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.